Hi, this is Paul. It's a big day today. This morning began with a four-hour live stream that Luke had on Grail Country and his channel. And Luke's live streams in the morning have been some of the best parts of TLC and what's happening around here. And it's hard for people with busy schedules to sort of capture it all, because there's just way too much information. And so some of us are sort of synthesizing, and some of the other channels, because the TLC is really a network, a flotilla, as Grizz likes to say. And so we're watching each other, and so we're doing synthesizing too. So we're taking little bits and pieces and taking them. And so I'm going to do some of that with this morning's live stream. I also had a three-hour conversation with Brendan Graham Dempsey today, which was just outstanding. The first 2 hours were his story, and it was well told, and it's a great story. It really helped me understand where he's at. And then the next hour, he was asking me questions, and I'm putting some of those questions into clips. And so they'll come on the channel, and probably next week I'll release the full story. Those of you who have the No Wait, No Ads membership can see the whole thing now. If you can't wait, if you can wait, the whole thing will be on the open channel next week. And it's only a week, so don't fret about it. But I'm going to cover more of what happened in the live stream this morning, because I thought it was really outstanding. And part of the reason why I say what I say, I also yesterday did an outstanding conversation with Christian Baxter, which I'm sure will at some point be out on his channel, and then maybe I'll repost it on mine because my channel's a little larger. But just really a terrific time with Christian. And it's fun being on other people's channels sometimes, because they get different things out of me. And so it was just a couple of really great days with some really fine conversations. I want to begin, though, with a little something that Tayo said, which I thought really captured the difference between this little corner and a lot of what I see happening in Christian YouTube. Now I'm going to try a different way to play this. Let's see how it goes.
And I think that's what I find interesting about this space especially. It's the going back and, you know, for example, the Sola Scriptura conversation.
Nope, wrong one.
Yeah, here I was just going to affirm what both of you said, and also what Sherry said. It's the more interesting conversation is it's not so much finding out why you're not where I'm at. It's finding out why you're at where you're at. And in that conversation, hopefully getting to a point where I can learn, not in like, that's good to know, like, but as in I can learn how, why you're at, you being at where you're at is important for me.
I'm going to play that again, because I thought that was just so key.
Yeah, I was just going to affirm what both of you said, and also what Sherry said. It's the more interesting conversation is it's not so much finding out why you're not where I'm at. It's finding out why you're...
The more interesting conversation is not so much finding out, let's say, the difference between where you're at and I'm at. That's sort of Christian YouTube. And then you're at here and I'm at here, and we're going to battle and, you know, figure out who's right. That's sort of the monarchical vision. And this little corner is sort of beginning at the first person. Okay, you're at here, I'm at there. Now again, just leaving it there is unsatisfying. There's going to be wrestling that you both want to figure out what I can get from this, but the goal isn't necessarily prove me right, prove you wrong, prove my tribe right, prove your tribe wrong. Although, again, we're not dismissing that and saying, well, all tribes are the same and let's just be kind and nice. And we're not saying that, but we're sort of leaning into the process of, again, and a lot of it boils down to sort of Jordan Peterson's, one of his rules and 12 rules for life. Basically, listen to someone else as if they have something to teach you.
Yeah, I was just going to affirm what both of you said, and also what Sherry said. It's the more interesting conversation is it's not so much finding out why you're not where I'm at. It's finding out why you're at where you're at. And in that conversation, hopefully getting to a point where I can learn, not in like a, oh, that's good to know, like, but as in I can learn how why you're at you being at where you're at is important for me.
Okay, now I want to jump to Chad came in. Now, most of the stuff was sort of in the second half of the stream. You can always check the transcript and get into the 4-hour stream. I'll leave the link to the 4-hour stream below. But Chad came in and said something with respect to the meta-modern conversation that I'm having with Brandon Graham Dempsey. I was trying to keep the name straight. And I thought Chad really nailed a lot of what's going on, including of what's going on in terms of how you can understand Peterson in this getting beyond modernity and postmodernity. And again, the labels might change, but we're using the meta-modern label right now.
Thinking a lot about especially when I watched Christian Baxter's conversation with Brendan Dempsey Graham or whatever his name is. So I was alerted to when he mentioned metamodern Christianity. Firstly, I thought, wow, this is actually probably the cutting edge of the conversation, and I wasn't really excited about it because I think there's a conflation between a way of life and a tool bench. And so metamodern Christianity is kind of, I think, what we're actually doing, but it's not a way of life. This is a workbench that we're working on here. We're trying to work stuff out. And I don't think that we're actually protesting. I think that we're, excuse me, I've said before, like the protest has ended. We just haven't admitted it. And we're actually more being contestants here. So we're trying to figure out where we belong. This is how you can have Job over in the Netherlands, who is like an elder at a Reformed church, but uses the rosary in his private time and kisses a cross. You know, I mean, so like we're actually in a new something that is emerging. And I was thinking, it's not a reformation, it's not a protest. But I was, because I like to think about these different words, and I was thinking of it's a conformation, so like which is a shape of a body. So we're trying to figure that out. And then also a conflation, so we're deliberating between the two, trying to figure out where each of us belong. Because the fact is, like, we're not going to go out there and be activists. So one, we're not protesting, we're not activists. We're actually trying to live personally into this to figure out where we belong, what is right. And I think like that's actually going to be, we're going to see lots and lots and lots more of this stuff as we move forward. And I think that we're actually like seriously on the cutting edge of all of this stuff. And so the fact that we're doing this and we're modeling how to do this work at this metamodern Christianity workbench is very, very valuable because, yeah, I mean, this is serious stuff, man. I mean, so I don't know. What do you think about that? Metamodern Christianity as a workbench, not a way of life.
Now I'm
Thinking
gonna
a lot about especially when I watched
play it again. Played it through. Okay.
Christian Baxter's conversation with Brendan Dempsey Graham or whatever his name is. So I was alerted to when he mentioned metamodern Christianity. Firstly, I thought, wow, this is actually probably the cutting edge of the conversation. And I wasn't.
I think he's right. And when I did my video about Peterson's missing ecclesiology, it struck me. So I often make a video, and again, my videos are all rough drafts. They're all thinking in process. And I thought about, so I went home after I made that video last night, and I thought about how Peterson's struggling to settle on a church. And because the missing ecclesiology, as I said with Brendan today, ecclesiology is like the non-sexy ology in the loci of theologies: Christology, doctrine of God, soteriology, doctrine of salvation, anthropology, doctrine of man. All of these things, everybody looks at those, and ecclesiology is where the rubber hits the road. And Peterson is struggling, and of course he sort of articulates in that conversation a hero's journey metaphor of salvation. That's his soteriology, the hero's journey. And as I continue to ponder this, maybe I'll make a video about how that hero's journey relates to Christian theology and especially atonement and the work of Christ. Because you could certainly frame the work of Christ as a hero's journey, but part of what I was working at in my sermons in the Gospel of Mark coming up to Easter has been how Jesus is a very different hero's journey. And I think, you know, if we got into Dune a little bit, we would see a very different framing of the hero's journey. Part of what, say, Dune brings out that Star Wars doesn't bring out is there's some dark sides to this hero's journey. You get a little bit of inkling of that in Star Wars, but Dune really leans into it. Muad'Dib is very reluctant because he believes that his hero's journey is going to bring a cataclysm across the universe with his warriors from Dune, the Freeman sort of being the new Sardaukon. So there's a lot going in that. And so Peterson, I think a big part of what's going on in the church, again, The Atlantic just put out a new piece. It's entitled The True Cost of Church Going Bust. Many Americans seem to have found no alternative method to build a sense of community. As an agnostic, I've spent most of my life thinking about the decline of faith in America in mostly positive terms. Organized religion seems to me beset by scandal and entanglement of noxious politics. So I thought, what is really to mourn? And you see this all over the Richard Dawkins piece. Oh, we want to keep civilizational Christianity, but this believing thing needs to go away. And that's deeply in the meta-modern conversation that Brendan Dempsey and I keep getting into, because we're sussing this out and we're doing it together. And so we're wrestling. It's productive play. We're working through this. And I'm super happy, really, with both of my conversations with Brendan. My first conversation, more contesting. I didn't think it was in an unhealthy way, but that sort of felt not TLC. The second one will feel much more TLC. Because I basically said, let's do this conversation the way we're discovering in terms of our estuary and our TLC and all of this stuff as we're working out our metamodernism. But also all over the place now, and this is a big part of Justin Brierley's book too, about the new belief in God. Well, is it like a living God or a personal God, or do we need the idea of God? And of course, Jordan's right in there thinking, because he's safe enough to go out in public and talk about the idea of God and all of that, but he's still sort of, yeah, he's on the borders. To which someone says, the nice church lady says, could you help us move some of these chairs? And it was Alan who made the joke. I pinned it on the top. I really think of myself as more of a border person. In other words, you don't want to help move the chairs. When the nice church lady asks you to move the chairs, move some chairs. I mean, so this person writing this, so I thought that what is there really to mourn with the death of the church? Only in the past few years have I come to see it in a different way. Maybe religion, with all of its faults, works a bit like a retaining wall to hold back the destabilizing pressure of American hyper-individualism, which threatens to swell and spill over its absence. Enjoy an unlimited year of access. More than a quarter of Americans now identify as atheist, agnostic, or religious unaffiliated, according to this new survey, which is the highest level of non-religiosity. Two-thirds of non-believers were brought up in at least a nominal Christian household. And so a lot of this metamodernity is looking for a religion that can work for them. And they're struggling to find it. And so Jordan's wife has joined the Catholic Church, and Jordan's daughter is worshiping in evangelical churches. She married an evangelical man. And Jordan's at the border looking on and thinking, hey, I'm participating in this. And fair enough, more so than just about anybody else, more so than even some of us who are in church being more successful. So yeah, it's hard to cast stones at Jordan Peterson for what he's done. And God's clearly using him, and I praise God for it. And so I'm not gonna weigh in and browbeat the man. But in some ways, Jordan Peterson is sort of where a lot of people are. And in this deconstruction phase, they're sort of moving out. And I'm going to post this on Thursday morning. Wednesday afternoon, I posted the clip from my conversation with Brendan about deconstruction and why collapse. It was such a great conversation. It was such a great conversation. Such an interesting guy. It's much more the way I prefer to go about these conversations. So such an and so there's this collapse, and we're sort of trying to put the pieces back together. Let's go back to the let's see.
Here we go. I think part of the reason why this isn't a protest is because Christianity is losing political power. And I think that that's part of what is stirring this change for us and forcing a reconsideration of things. Whereas in 1500, Christianity was at the peak of its political power. And so to change things, you had to be a political protester in addition to a religious protester. And so I think we're trying to figure out what Christianity looks like as it loses political power.
You don't think there's a political protest involved in saying this isn't just like we're not going to solve this crisis with a left-right binary?
I mean, there's obviously something
political. Now, what Matt said right there, I think, is deeply part of the process that we are crafting together in these live streams, with these videos, in the comment section, in Estuary, that they're with all of these binaries, okay, churched, unchurched, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, everyone else. That's kind of seems to be the way the Orthodox with their new confidence. It's like, we're Orthodox, we're old, we'll take on all comers. Come and get us. Really? You're kind of small. at least in America. So, and I said that in a black shirt. How do you like that? So this is what we're working through. And I think Matt really touched on something there and said we're facing the limitations of setting up binaries. And we're accepting opponent processing, but we're saying that, you know, Mark Lefevre of Navigating Patterns, you know, never liked opponent processing. And Chad gives props to Mark here too. Mark's made a lot of important contributions, even though Mark's sort of gone off with sort of the Catholic faction around Father Eric, but he still listens occasionally and leaves his meaty comments. But we're seeing the limitations of this kind of processing and seeing we need to have more of this kind of processing. But and it doesn't mean you sort of lose yourself. Mitch, at the end, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to incorporate these all of these clips. Mitch, at the end, asked a question that comes up regularly, but is this safe the way we're doing it? And I think I might just leave that one at the end because I'm really short of time because I've got men's group tonight and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, and I've spent a lot of TLC time today. So, but okay. Yes, it is dangerous. Yes, it is dangerous. And deconstruction is dangerous. And all of this stuff is dangerous. There's no safe space on planet Earth with the exception of Jesus. Just letting you know what I think. What is your only comfort in life and in death? And I am not my own, but belong body and soul and life and in death, my faithful faith is Jesus Christ. That's the Heidelberg Catechism, question and answer one. Go look it up. It's great. But this is what we're tussling with.
Political, even the process of losing political power is a political process. And yeah. So that there will be, you know, some amount of politics involved in this, and that's fine. And that was interesting. Michael Schellenberger and Peterson were talking about that, right? Because Schellenberger's like, look, we need to get a powerful Democratic coalition to fight the transgender butchers. And if we get too religious about it, we won't have a majority. And Peterson's like, I just don't think that there's a partisan level political solution to this. We need to get back to deeper roots and then rebuild from there. I think that was basically his point.
And that political thing there is only going to be put on by those who are minimally invested in the spiritual way of life. You know, like, because it's levels above. It's nowhere near the foundation where the problem is. which is actually connection. And if Mark Lefebvre has anything really great to say, it is there's an intimacy crisis. And that is essentially like the at the foundation of the spiritual malady.
I really should bring up Chad's quote from the big book in AA, because that was an astounding part of it. I can't find it. I'm going to replay Tayo, and then, well, I'll just play what he said about metamodern, because I think he really nailed it there too. Oh, Mouse, where did you go? Here you are. Go.
And I think that's what I find interesting about this space, especially. It's the going back and, you know, for example, the Sola Scriptura conversation. I reject the notion that was like a terrible mistake that should not have happened. No, God allowed it to happen. That was, and there's a reason why that happened at the time that it did. And the useful thing in the conversation that you and Matt are hopefully going to have that, you know, so I've invited myself to, is seeing how what we're doing now maps on almost like scarily to that time. And the metamodern move is not so much, okay, the church has to change, the Luther stance or the church needs to change, otherwise it's all going to shit. I don't think that's where we're at now with the church in the broad term. It's so diverse. It's so diverse at the moment. I think that there's so much gold to be getting from all of the different positions, including the progressive position, which is why I love what CW is doing. If it's truly all gift, which we all tend to affirm, then let's use that posture against even people that are the exact opposite position to where we're standing.
And I think Tayo's quite right there, that Matt earlier said the left-right is not going to be the way we get out of this. And Sam says, you know, as Peterson's selling a Schellenberger, I don't know if Peterson's going to say I'm done with the political game. I think Peterson is beginning to realize that the political game only gets you so far. Now he's living in Daily Wire camp. But it's so interesting what he said about Daily Wire. He said all of the people at Daily Wire want to get out of the political thing and want to talk metaphysics. They want to talk religion. They want to talk this. And Ben Shapiro himself said it in his conversation with Jordan that, you know, it's the 30,000 foot level isn't working. We got to get back to the campfire. You got to get back to the one-on-one, and you got to get back to the small group, and you got to get back to saying, okay, this isn't working. All we're doing is getting our knuckles bloody. Can we open our hands somehow and start talking? And can we actually have this conversation? Lance then in the conversation said basically, well, 2024 election's going to be different because everybody already knows a Trump presidency and a Biden presidency. We have already had version one of both of those things. Now you're going to have version two of one of them, probably, unless some third-party miracle happens. But nobody's asking themselves, am I going to vote for one or the other? That's very thin between the two, which probably means a Biden presidency, except Biden is, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, if Biden were as he was in 2020, he'd probably win again, but he's slower. So what does that mean? And where is this going? And you've got RFK Jr. in the mix. And who knows if another third party, there's still time with the speed of this culture that a third party person could come in and whoosh and change the board dramatically. Maybe it's going to be, oh, what's her head from Hawaii? Who, you know, will Trump make her his Veep? Who knows? But we're recognizing that, hey, this doesn't work. And so, well, how are we going to actually talk? And I think that's happening at sort of the body level, at the church level. As I challenged Luke, because Luke was talking about confessionalism, I says, yeah, but it's happening within each of us, and within us, there are many that we try to integrate into one. And as the bodies go up, there are many, and we try and integrate them into one. And so we're sort of learning the integration at different levels and trying to make it happen at different levels. Now, I'm going to end here because I'm out of time, but I'm going to tack on the last bit of the conversation that Mitch led that is very common in this corner. It's like, well, what about convictions? And I would say, as Lance did, that many of us have convictions. I have convictions, and my convictions are different from yours. And now I'm now over 60. I'm 60 years old. The cake is baked. I'm not looking to become Orthodox. I'm not looking to become Roman Catholic. I'm not looking to change a lot of things, but I'm listening and I'm learning, and other things are changing within me. And what's really changing is our ability to come together. As I talked to Brendan, I mean, there's in many ways sort of a new ecumenism arising, but it's not the style of ecumenism we've seen before. A lot of people have noticed that we are now having conversations, not say between the heads up about 16th century distinction, but we're having conversations down here, and we're practicing that here and now. And I think it's a good thing. But I'll leave with what's left of that conversation, and I'll put the link to the whole conversation down below. So leave a comment. Let me know what you think.
I struggle to apply. I struggle to actually believe that I can know anything and then, you know, profess things and teach, train, rebuke, correct. Now I'm a dad as well. And so I can't constantly be like on the fence about things. I can't constantly be in this liminal space where I can go anywhere. You know, I can see that being true. Perpetually on the other handing everything. And I'm sure it comes out in a kind of annoying way when I'm on these things, because it's like when somebody says something, I'm like, but actually, or like on the other hand, and you know, that's not helpful either. So, I mean, I just really, really have a hard time trying to decide and make decisions and live with the constant knowledge that I could be wrong about something. And, you know, you have a duty to the people in your life, to your family and to your friends, to try to pull them back from the traffic they're about to walk into. And that's just, I mean, that's an extreme example, but it occurs in non-extreme ways all the time. Man, I'm stuck. I know what you're saying is true, but I'm stuck.
I think Mitch, I'm glad you, Lance is obviously one of the best people to speak to about this with, and there's a lot of great people here who have Alcoholics Anonymous expertise, which is kind of, I think that's kind of a, there's an architecture there that's applied here, I think, where, and correct me if I'm wrong, but AA is not, it's not a space where you think being an alcoholic is just as ethically good for you. And we're not, people aren't like perfectly subjectivist and relativist about whether or not it's good to be an alcoholic, but there's a lot of room for people to grow at their own pace in a way. Like I kind of think of this quarter as kind of like the appendix of the internet, where there's a lot of, we build up our immune systems here in particular by safely engaging some stuff that can be healthy. It's can it be healthy if we engage these like toxic
micro
foreign stuff? Yeah,
don't stop. But I wanted to bookmark, are we doing it safely? But keep.
Yeah, and we might. Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes you get appendicitis, right? And it can threaten your life. So you have to make sure that your immune system can handle it. Your cells can do it well, and you got to make sure that the biome of crazy dangerous stuff is getting to the right places so it can be managed appropriately. And I think that's what TLC is about. You know, the appendix isn't just there to treat crazy, wild, dangerous stuff the same as, you know, our white blood cells. It's there to handle it so that we can live better, healthier lives, you know, overall. But you have to give space for that sort of stuff to live for a little bit in the appendix, which is, it's a strange paradox Like, you kind of, I don't know, the metaphor kind of breaks down, but I feel like AA, simply put, I feel like AA is a good archetype, which is why there's a lot of leaders here who are AA experienced. Over.
My question, Mitch, would be, do you believe, like, in your, I don't know if you're a Christian, but do you believe that this is something that God wants you to change? This is a way of being that God wants you to change or to adopt. And I say that just to give a little bit more context, because part of why I think TLC is emboldening people to be able to find like the position. So, for example, one of the reasons why I think we welcome the atheists and the people that are different is because we want to practice loving them. And not like, I think it would be disingenuous to for anyone to say that I don't want more people to think the way that I do. I think that's what we're doing by casting spells. Like, every speech I'm casting is a way for me to be better understood, so that hopefully more people can affirm what's the speech, the thing that I'm saying. At the same time, it's recognizing that every word you're saying as well, it's for a purpose. So I'm wondering if there's the gift, trying to practice what I'm trying to preach, the gift of your position is that, yes, we could get, there are some people that do need to be kept out or to be dealt with differently than the old lovey-dovey center that TLC has. Like, maybe the fringe of TLC needs people that are not as winsome, people that are less agreeable. And if we're just trying to change everyone to be PVK, maybe that's not so much a good. Does that make sense at all?
Mm.
To see you, brother.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't want to get I don't want to have this, what I'm trying to get at, characterized as, you know, trying to make everyone exactly uniform or there not being any disagreeableness. But I think there's something, like, there's some things you don't want in the city. And, you know, and then that's what happens. So if somebody comes into the city, I'm glad you're here, because it's dangerous out there. And I want to show you how we live in the city. And hopefully that will be a fruitful life for you. If you're going to compromise, if what you're espousing is compromising the safety of the city, I have to ask you to leave. And so I don't get glad when there's a harmful ideology here, simply because it creates diversity. But at the same time, you know, I recognize, in just the broadest sense possible, that, you know, oh, maybe the city leaders are wrong. You know, maybe they didn't get it right, and we've got poison in the water somehow. But I don't think you can live that way all the time. I don't think you can constantly be open to having your mind change, because I don't know.
Well, do you get the sense that people are really interested in having their mind changed? A lot of times people come on to exercise demons, frankly. They're not here to, and but that's part good. Of the healing process too, in a way, which is interesting.
Right. Or just as demons out of here if you identify them. But I mean, no, I don't know. At this point, you know, we're adults. It's kind of like, right now we are tasked with carrying something and passing it down to the future and protecting something that we've been passed down. And we lose a lot of the privilege and the joy that comes with kind of being a little more free for all about what we believe. And I, at different seasons in my life, I've got a lot of joy out of, you know, just being so open-minded, like, oh, nothing freaks me out. This idea doesn't freak me out. That's all great. Bring it on. I love, you know, entertaining these things and, like, maybe that could be fun. That could be true. Yeah, but at a certain point, I wonder if we have to, like, that's a type of taking on the cross, is saying, no, that's not right. And so you risk leadership and you risk being wrong and you carry the torch, and it's the best thing you can do.
the catchphrase I say people, I say go to church. And what I mean by that is, in some ways, it's you have to engage in the human relationships around you. That's like the best way to go about that. You know, you have relationship, you have a family, you have some kind of community around you. And so that's the best place to go, because in some ways that's the place that will have this procedural aspect to it that will ground the other stuff. You know, it's like if you have to, you know, to help your kids with their homework, or you have to do this kind of really grounded stuff that has nothing, that's very little to do with the ideology, you get engaged in other people's lives, then it binds you in a different way, right? It binds you.
And then, like, my, you know, my father would, he was going to church, and I wasn't really living with him, but he was going to church, and he would, like, kind of, those are elements of this conversation. Is I gotta go to church.
It's being part of a church is part of Christian discipleship. And in that word discipleship, there's this word discipline, which is, it's a discipline to go to church.
What would be so great about actually going to a church is, like, you start going to a church so that when you do need, like, to be prayed for, when you have something to be prayed for about, you have a place to just say that.
You're dead on right, Grizz, and that is what the church is for. To know and be known, to love and be loved, to have a place to go where people can pray for you, where they will welcome you in. And this is, again, part of why I'm, you know, I want churches to have estuaries, because it is, I know that it is difficult in many churches for people to, in a sense, come in and bring their real self. And what I mean by that is, have to say what's on their mind, or you can't wrestle with them. It's like, you know, so Plato, you know, as John reminds us, is broad, so he's a wrestler. You can't wrestle over a screen. So maybe if it's paintball for Jesus, maybe it should be wrestling with Plato. Because, and in church, in a real space, now often it doesn't happen, I understand that, but at least there's a chance to actually have a relationship with grit. And that's part of why churches are local, they're relational, they're face-to-face, they're in real life.
Said about why would young people want to go to church. And I feel like I want to have some kind of dynamic message or something that if they do find some reason to come, you know, I'm trying to fish, so I'm throwing bait, and I'm trying to hook somebody. It's what Paul is doing too. It's, he said about being evangelical. Evangelism of some sort.
Well, fishers of men is the
yes.
Is the promise, yes?
Yes, correct.
He's possessed. We did go to church today. I took communion.
I don't go to church to think or to rationalize God. I go to church to worship Him. Right? And that's, I'm happy with that. I'm very happy with that. And afterwards, during coffee hour, we can all argue about the God of our understanding, right?
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think that the wild twin, I mean, the thing that led to my sort of dawning to consciousness of Christianity was a 101 day vigil that I did in forest. And I went into the forest.
You don't have to go crazy. Yeah. You actually have to go, you have to humble yourself and be, and do it right here, right now, right?
Get up. I like how Father Spemann talks about it for the life of the world. He says it starts when you get up and get ready and you walk or you go to church. You start those are simple. I get up. I brush my teeth, I take a shower, mm-hmm. I put on clothes, I go, the things of life, and we're ascending up into heaven. You're-